All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here for our first case, 13-1598, Fred Sanborn, Ruth and Carol Cox, and Ruth Hubbard versus the Hamilton County Budget Commission, Indian Hill Board of Education, and Indian Hill Exempted Village School District. For the appellant, Mr. Thompson.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Maurice Thompson with the 1851 Center. I represent the named taxpayer appellants of Indian Hill, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. Your Honors, this court must declare unlawful Indian Hill School District's 1.25 mil property tax increase, which is still being levied today, because the tax increase represents the extreme outer limits of a violation of Ohio's firm statutory prohibition on local government tax increases without a vote, where or when that local government is already running a huge budget surplus that could entirely pay for the desired new spending and carrying a huge unencumbered reserve account that could also entirely pay for the new spending.
And this Council, had they not had that surplus, what would your argument be?
The unencumbered account is also relevant, Your Honor, to whether the funds, whether the new spent, the tax increase is clearly required. So there are two alternatives. 5705.14 allows for a transfer from the general fund surplus to pay for the permanent improvements, and 5705.14 also allows for a transfer of the huge reserve account of $25 million to pay for the new expenses. So either could be used, and the reason that that bank account essentially could be used is because it's unencumbered. There are a such thing as encumbered reserve accounts, but by statute this is not an encumbered reserve account because Indian Hill never established it by resolution, nor could it because it's too large to be established by resolution. The BTA did specifically find that to be the case. So either the surplus or the reserve account could be used by the operation of 5705 to pay for the new expenses in the permanent improvement fund. Now, if the words of 5705.341 are to have some meaning, it's not clear how this court could rule for Indian Hill School District. That statute provides, in part, nothing shall permit the levying of any rate of taxation unless such rate of taxation for the ensuing fiscal year is clearly required by a budget of the taxing district. And we have four elements there, some of which the BTA and Indian Hill utterly ignores. First of all, there's a clear prohibition on raising taxes unless three things are true. One, the tax increase is clearly required, and this is not a fund-by-fund analysis. Nowhere does that, is that in statute. What this is a quantitative, not a qualitative analysis. We don't look at, do we like the expenses? Do we think they're too high or too low? In this case, the money is being spent largely on AstroTurf for some athletic fields, and it's not our job to judge the amount being spent or whether that's a good expenditure. We just look at, there's $10 million in tax revenue minus $9 million in expenditures, and that's $1 million left over that's being overtaxed that belongs in the pockets of the taxpayers.
But wasn't there an inside millage of 10 mils being collected?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what was the outside millage that was approved by the voters?
Well, the nominal outside millage was above the 20 mils but had fallen.
What did the voters vote on and enact?
Well, the voters had not passed a tax levy in quite some time. A tax levy had not been on the ballot in quite some time. So certain nominal millage was approved.
Let me try that again. How much millage was being collected by the school district?
The school district had reached the 20 mil floor.
20 mils. Has the voters approved 10 outside millage or not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I believe so.
Has the school district collected more than 20 mils?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, then what are you saying about additional tax?
Well, what happened here, Your Honor, is when Indian Hill moved the millage to the Permanent Improvement Fund, it triggers a tax increase that is basically the equivalent of a replacement levy.
Was the tax increase more than 20 mils?
No. No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor, but what happens by operation of law is that the tax reduction factors in HB 920 do not kick in where they otherwise would. So when voters approve some nominal millage decades earlier, obviously that rate falls to a lower effective millage over time, and this stops the falling to a lower effective millage to adjust for inflation. So it's the equivalent of a 5705-192 replacement levy, where the district would replace a fallen levy with a higher effective rate of millage. It's essentially the same thing. When voters pass these things, they count on the HB 920 reduction factors, and that didn't happen here, which is what creates the tax increase that wouldn't otherwise occur. The important factor here, this has to be clearly required for the ensuing fiscal year and by a budget of the taxing district. And it appears as though BTA ignored both of those requirements. They considered long-term considerations, and Indian Hill's whole case is based upon long-term considerations for the tax increase, 5 to 10 year projections, even longer. They talk about wanting to build up 1 year of operating funds in their bank account over time.
Is it your view that any district that has a surplus cannot move millage from one to the other?
Your Honor, it would depend upon a number of other factors as well. So in the situation you pose, I would also want to know about the reserve bank account. Is it encumbered or unencumbered? If it's unencumbered, then we also must take that into consideration.
So your best argument is that because there is a surplus, this was not clearly required in this case.
Not just a surplus, but a surplus that is, in fact, more than the revenue that was going to be collected by the new tax increase, and more than the expenses. More importantly,
who calculated the revenue from the tax increase?
Indian Hill has calculated that revenue.
Is it in our record somewhere?
It is in the record.
What is it?
It's about $1.6 million per year.
And because it's $1.6 million per year and the surplus is at least equal to that, you think this is not clearly required as per statute?
Not quite, Your Honor. It's actually much more simple than that. The tax increase is not required because the tax increase is for the purpose of funding the permanent improvement expenditures. So you look at those expenditures. In the budget, they're about $700,000. So you say, do I have that $700,000 somewhere else in the tax budget? And the answer is a resounding yes. There's a $1.8 million surplus in the general fund that could be transferred to pay those expenses. Meanwhile, there's also $25 million in unencumbered reserve funds that could also, by statute, be transferred to pay those expenses. So you look at the expenditures and you say, do I have that money somewhere else in the tax budget? And in the case of Indian Hill here, it's a resounding yes. You've got it in the surplus of the general fund, which again, 5705-214 allows that transfer to pay for those funds. You've also got it in the unencumbered reserve fund, $25 million. I mean, and in fact, you talk about $700,000 in expenses. Indian Hill could run a budget deficit, if you will, of $1 million for 25 years without still it being clearly required for it to increase taxes, because it would still have that money available
in the
reserve fund.
But they have an articulated use for that money, do they not?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
$25 million. Isn't there a rationale why they don't want to use that?
They have a rationale. However, there is no legally binding rationale. They can use that money for whatever they want, Your
they
Honor.
They can?
They can because it's unencumbered. There is a process by which they could pass a resolution to designate a use of those funds and encumber those funds, but Indian Hill has never passed that resolution. That's a 5705
resolution. So you're saying that they're just collecting this money, is just sitting there, and they have not articulated why they're accumulating this $25 million pot?
They have articulated why they're accumulating it, Your Honor, informally.
Informally,
they say that they want to build up a stockpile of reserve funds.
For operating costs for at least a year.
That's right. They want to, aside from the tax revenue they're collecting, they want this counter-cyclical bank account, which is...
Rainy day fund.
Essentially a rainy day fund, but a huge rainy day fund. And the thing about the operation of 5705 is it does not allow for districts to run and collect these huge surpluses. And that may seem counterintuitive to all of us because we want our governments to be fiscally responsible, but what the legislature has done instead here is say, look, you should collect no more tax revenue. You shouldn't tax the people at a higher rate than you need to. So you actually should run as close to even budgets over time as you can.
Council, is that where the phrase clearly required comes in at that point? Are you arguing that there must be a demonstration that this is clearly required for some purpose?
Yes, well...
You understand I'm from South Russell Village. That's where I live.
Yes, so you're familiar with the precedent here, Your Honor. And that's such a firm statutory limit on the taxing authority. And it's really important to view this as an entire system. You can go to the voters and do whatever you want in 5705. It allows the district to go to the voters and stockpile funds in a reserve. It also allows them to go to the voters and run huge surpluses as long as the voters approve it. School districts can't unilaterally raise taxes under 5705. There is some objective check on what they must do. That objective check is either the voters. But if you don't want to go to the voters, as Indian Hill didn't hear, then you have to go through the very firm requirement that the budget, that the tax increase needs to be clearly required for the ensuing fiscal year by the numbers in the budget themselves. And that has to be a high and a firm burden that the district faces. Otherwise, they're just going to increase property taxes without a vote each and every time. And that's the risk that the court runs in this case. Is if Indian Hill wins here, you've essentially eviscerated 5705-341's limits by judicial fiat and ushered in school districts to raise taxes without going to the voters first. So it's a very important and serious issue that will have wide repercussions.
So it's not the issue of raising the money, it's the matter of how it was done. I mean, or how the taxes were increased is what you're saying. It has to be done by the voters in this particular situation.
In this particular situation, it has to be done by the voters, Your Honor, because the tax increase was not clearly required by, and importantly, in the ensuing fiscal year, by the budget itself. And you see all of this testimony about long-term considerations. Utterly irrelevant. The BTA actually changed the law in this case from clearly required by the budget to clearly required by the budget or other information. That's language that they borrowed from kind of a one-off statement in an Ohio Attorney General's opinion. And you see Indian Hill arguing over and over again for this standard by the budget or other information. But the statute doesn't allow for other information. You just look at the firm numbers in the budget themselves. And what we know from the budget is you've got $700,000 in expenditures. Even if you had twice that, you've got a $1.85 million surplus in the general fund to pay these expenditures. And even if you didn't have that, you've got $25 million in a completely unencumbered reserve account to pay these expenditures. So you cannot say that this tax increase was clearly required for the ensuing fiscal year, which would have been the 2010-11 budget, or that is required by the face of the budget itself.
And what would the voters have voted on had the school board gone to them?
5705 allows for a permanent improvements levy, Your Honor, and that's 5705-21 and 217 allows Indian Hill to put the permanent improvement expenditures on the ballot, and they could have put a 1.25 mil tax increase on the ballot. So the voters
could be outside millage?
Well, it probably would be. It would be outside millage, Your Honor, because the move would not have taken place otherwise.
So they would have put on an approval of the transfer of the money? Is that what you're talking about?
No, Your Honor. They simply would have put on a tax levy for an increase, a special levy for permanent improvements. Oh, I'm sorry. 21A does allow for a special levy for permanent improvements within the 10 mil limitation. So they could have put on within the 10 mil or without. So there are procedures in 5705 to put this exact issue before the voters.
What code section is that?
5705-21A and 5705-217. Those are the two that allow for permanent improvement levies to be put before the voters. And
did you say that would be within the 10 mil outside millage that's already been approved?
One is within the 10 mil, 21A, and the other appears to me to be beyond the 10 mil, an outside millage move.
Mm-hmm. Council, what's the remedy that you're looking for at this point?
Good question, Your Honor. It appears to be a remand to the Budget Commission with instructions to invalidate the unlawful tax increase at the time it took place. The Budget Commission didn't think it had the power to deny the tax increase. If you look at the record, it was a 2-1 vote. One of the commissioners that voted specifically said this tax increase is not necessary prior to voting. He just felt as though his hands were tied by the Attorney General's opinion. And quite wrongfully so. That opinion is not nearly as broad as it's being read by Indian Hill. So
if we were to do that, though, then what happens? The money is already being collected, correct?
Right. And, Your Honor, we've brought this issue to Indian Hill's attention for 4 years now. We made a motion for preliminary injunction to enjoin it. We made a writ of postedendo in this court when BTA said it will take us 3 years to act, and they fought us on that. So the question is, we invalidate the tax increase because at the time it was passed, it was not lawful. And then there's a case in Hamilton County where we have to haggle over what does that mean? Does that mean that the money
refund?
Is refunded? And I think that the answer is not that harsh for Indian Hill. They can come back the very next year and either put it on the ballot or make their budget work so that they can do this. Maybe their budget does work now, for all we know. Maybe the expenses need tax funding now. But for this past 4 years, what happens, it's possible that the money could be refunded or some of it could be refunded. But that's for the lower courts to determine in a separate case.
Thank you.
See, my time has expired.
Thank you. Mr. Petrie.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Bruce Petrie from the law firm of Graydon Head. With me this morning is Chip Finke, my colleague. I'm here today representing Appalee, Indian Hill Exempted Village School District and Board of Education. Your Honors, the standard of review is a very important part of this case because it is integral with a key principle in the case. And a key principle in the case is the freedom of a local Board of Education working with its citizens through hearings, community input to control its budget, subject, of course, to review by the Budget Commission and subject to review by the Board of Tax Appeals. In this case, both the Budget Commission and the Board of Tax Appeals agreed with the decision, a difficult decision, by five elected officials representing the community, the people of Indian Hill.
And yet, if they were incorrect in as a matter of law, it's up to us to make that clear, correct?
I believe that your standard of review, Your Honor, is circumscribed, that by your own authority, you've said that you defer to factual findings of the Board
factual
of Tax Appeals.
Factual findings, but not legal findings or legal conclusions, correct?
Your Honor, there is a deference standard to factual findings. The factual finding that the Board of Tax Appeals made twofold. One, that the movement of the inside millage was clearly required under the statute, 5705.341. Why was it clearly required, Your Honor? It was clearly required, first of all, because there was a significant specification of needs for capital improvements. In the supplement to our brief, there are 4 pages of identified needs. The council referred to AstroTurf. It wasn't just AstroTurf. It was a $75 million worth of infrastructure maintenance. It was upgrade to computers. These are what the community wanted. These are what the people of Indian Hill, through their elected officials,
said they wanted. Did you say it was $75 million for AstroTurf?
No, no. What I'm saying is that the value of the infrastructure of Indian Hill was about $75 million, and that the...
How much money did they need in that year?
What they needed was in... 2011 was the first full year of collections, Your Honor. Right. In that year, there were identified needs of $1.4 million in the Permanent Improvement Fund. And the movement of inside millage in the first full years of collection would provide approximately 1.6. Now, at the same time, the Indian Hill Board did in its general fund, not in the Permanent Improvement Fund, have an unencumbered balance of approximately $24 million. Mm-hmm. The record shows, by testimony of the district treasurer, that that was approximately 70%, that $24 million, of what it would take to run the school district for a year. So during the Great Recession, this decision was made in 2009, you recall, the board decided during the Great Recession to maintain this money.
Well, you speak of the Great Recession. Does Indian Hills have an income tax for schools?
No, sir.
Well, then they operate primarily off of property tax, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And recession or no recession, people have to pay their property taxes.
Yeah, that
just doesn't change.
That's true,
so,
Your Honor.
So municipalities or the state who live off of taxes that are reflected by a recession, but schools, and the complaint generally is that those revenues are static and they don't grow with an economy, but they also don't shrink with a bad economy.
Your Honor, here's what Indian Hill was faced with, was it didn't feel like it was a wise decision to spend its general fund, which was less than a year of operating, because it had permanent improvement needs, which were identified by the community. And that's why it established lawfully a permanent improvement fund, separate from the general fund. What the appellants are saying, and what the precedent they want here, and they want you to rule, which I think would make new law in Ohio, is that a school district can't decide to have an unencumbered balance like that in its general fund.
Well, and it's pretty rare, isn't it?
It is rare. And it is the result of sound fiscal conservative values that were applied to the budget by the Indian Hill
School District.
It's the
result of having a great tax base, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, we are blessed to have a good tax base. We have a AAA bond rating, and their budgets have been managed responsibly. The Indian Hill School District has been an excellent steward of public dollars.
Counsel, I guess what I'm wrestling with this morning, though, is it seems to be an answer to the chief's question. We got a $25 million rainy day fund, for lack of a better word. If the Board of Tax Appeals were to be upheld here, does an additional $25 million go into it in 12, 13, and 14? Does it keep growing at the rate of $25 million a year?
Not at the rate of $25 million a year. That was an unencumbered balance in the general fund. And the snapshot that we need to take here is of the 2010 decision that was made. That's what was reviewed, 2010.
Well, you referred to that the five courageous members of the school board made a hard decision, and that's what they're there for. But
yes.
Isn't there a requirement, as they respond to the taxpayers, that they show that this is clearly required for
yes.
something?
And there is, and they did. And why is it clearly required? First of all, the Board of Tax Appeals and the board had to design its budget, Your Honor. And in doing so, they considered what are our permanent improvement needs, and they listened to the community. They had hearings on that. They had community input. It was a democratic process. They listened to the voters. That was those needs were identified by listening to the voters and establishing what those needs were. And those needs were specified. Those are educational needs, Your Honor, school buses, technology, upgrades to the infrastructure. They also had to take into consideration the community's interest, because they were the elected board, in maintaining
So, Counsel, I guess what you're saying to us is you're not disagreeing with the standard. You're saying we're to defer to the judgment of the board and the Board of Tax Appeals.
We are.
That the case was made, that this was clearly required, now give it to us.
We're saying that the standard of review is that the judgment of the board shouldn't be substituted. And there is, you're from South Russell, Your Honor.
Speaking of well-heeled communities, yes.
you know that is the South Russell precedent, the judgment of the elected officials can't be substituted later on. And that really makes sense here. This would be an extremely disruptive result if the Supreme Court were to say, you know, we're going to go back and rewrite a school district budget.
But looking at the issue of clearly required and what the commissioner should have been doing in determining what was clearly required, are they not governed by 5705.14, or would you dispute that?
I think the clearly required standard, and there is, I believe that is at play here, Your Honor. The clearly required standard, I believe, has a plain meaning, and that is clearly required by a budget. The budget was provided by Indian Hill. It was submitted to the Budget Commission. What did that budget include? It included a judgment call about how to use the general fund, and it included judgment calls about what was necessary in the Permanent Improvement Fund. The Board of Tax Appeals rightly said that the decision as to how to use that general fund, Your Honor, was part of the, quote, discretionary budget decision of a local school board.
So it seems to me that your colleague on the other side is saying that the clearly required by the budget is limited to the actual numbers, where you're looking at it in a more expansive sense.
Your Honor, if I could, I look at it in a common sense, pragmatic way. A budget is a budget. All of you have designed budgets and worked on budgets. It's a plan. The numbers don't speak for themselves, and there's no law in Ohio saying there has to. A budget is an estimate.
But is it looking forward. Is it a budget that can be extrapolated for the coming years, or do we have to just look at the year in which we are talking here? Because the $25 million, the rainy day fund that is sitting there, the argument is that we should not touch that because in the future we may need that. And therefore, in this year, in this budget year, we're going to state that this year it's clearly required.
If you look at the word ensuing follows in the statute, 5705.341. Ensuing follows the words taxing, not the word budget, which I believe if you apply the plain meaning, that what the statute means is that the budget is a plan, and therefore there's nothing in the statute that says you can't have a fiscally prudent plan built into your school budget. It's common sense. If you have a capital budget, if you have permanent improvement, there are projects involved in that that are going to last more than a year, and a school district has to plan for that. Some of this work bridged subsequent
years. This transfer would net how much for the school district for their capital improvements?
Your Honor, in the first full year of collections, which was 2011,
right,
the inside millage generated approximately $1.6 million.
Right, and then going forward,
and
what was it going to do?
On a going forward basis, it's not in the record as to what every year would do, because we're looking at a snapshot, but I would say it's approximately 1.6 what the inside millage would generate.
And that was anticipated to be used every year in the 100% going forward.
In the Permanent Improvement Fund. And in the first year, there was $1.4 million of identified needs in the Permanent Improvement Fund.
All right, and let me ask you, the vision for the use of these dollars.
Yes.
Did it go beyond the first year? Was it discussed, we're going to do this in year one, we're going to do this in year two, we're going to do this, and extrapolate it out for 10 years?
Well, I would have to say that the permanent improvement fund and the design of using an improvement fund did have a life beyond 1 year, because the permanent improvement fund covered capital improvements, improvements to the school buildings, new buses, new technology that would continue. So,
Council,
yes.
How many students are in your school district?
I don't have a precise number of student count.
Ballpark.
Several hundred.
You don't have any idea how many students your client has?
I don't have an exact count of this school.
Well, let me ask you this. This $25 million, is it $25 million that's in the reserve fund?
It's not a reserve fund, Your
well,
Honor.
Whatever it is, whatever you call it. That's been accumulating over how long a period of time?
It has been accumulated over a period of time. The last time the school district had an operating levy was 1993, which was an emergency levy which expired 5 years thereafter.
Okay, so they've been putting money into this. What's the proper term for the fund?
There's the permanent improvement fund,
right.
And then there's the general fund. And then there is the unencumbered balance in the general fund.
The unencumbered balance. And that's the $25 million, right?
It's the 24. Yes.
$24 million. And have they drawn down on this? If they're accumulating, at what kind of a rate are they? How's this cranked up over time?
Well, I don't know. Your Honor,
how'd it got to be 25 or 24 million?
Well, I know that through careful management of the school and careful planning, that over time the unencumbered balance has been reserved there. It has been less than what it would take to run the school for a year, and the record, like I said earlier, is
okay. So, has it ever gone down from 1 year to the next? I guess is where I'm. Is it just ratcheting up every year, or has it some years has it gone down?
I don't believe it's gone down within the record of that's before you today.
Well, that's just a year, right?
Correct.
So you really don't know much about the history of the finances.
Well, I don't believe the record shows one way or another what the fluctuations have been in the $24 million over a period of time.
And when you say there's several hundred students, is that K through 12?
Yes, sir.
So, Council, you believe that the standard of review is a deference because this is really a factual finding by the board. Its use of these dollars is based on facts that have been determined by the board and approved by, as you call it, the democratic process. All right. But your opposing counsel would say that this is really a legal question on whether they could transfer those dollars, whether they I mean, it is a fact that they prioritized and they decided that they didn't want to dip into the rainy day fund. They'd rather, you know, do the maneuvering with the millage funds, and that's basically what it is. The question is not really a question of fact. It is a question of law. Were they allowed to do that? There's no question that they thought, based on facts, that this was the thing they wanted to do. They wanted to prioritize. They wanted to use this transfer of millage. Whether they're allowed to do it, and, you know, you say that because it was a fact that they established this, we have to defer. I would, you know, question that because I think it does become a question of law. Does the statutory scheme allow them to do that when there's clearly an excess of unencumbered funds
Yes.
available?
Yes.
Okay, there, and what's the authority, your best authority, allowing them to put in place the scheme that they have come up with?
Under 5705.341, they are permitted to designate, as they did, 1.25 of inside millage to a permanent improvement fund.
But they have to show significant need to do that, do they not?
Well, there is, Your Honor. It's the standard is clearly required. Under 5705.341, clearly required. And clearly required by a budget. With respect to your question, the determination of clearly required by a budget is, in our view, a question of fact that was determined by the Board of Tax Appeals, because the Board of Tax Appeals had to determine whether, in fact, the school board submitted a budget. They did. What were the details behind that? What was the rationale that went into not moving the unencumbered balance? And the Board of Tax Appeals determined that under the clearly required standard, as a matter of fact, that it was clearly required.
Has Indian Hills done this in the past?
No, this was the first time that it did this, Your Honor.
Is it commonly done among other districts, to your knowledge?
I don't think so. I think that the use of inside millage is something that we can do. After all, inside every school district in Ohio has a guaranteed allocation of inside millage, which we do, over 6.0. And so
I know there's an attorney general opinion on this subject.
That's correct.
Are there other appellate court opinions or other opinions on
the,
it?
The primary authority we rely upon is the 2005 attorney general's opinion, which did involve inside millage and the movement from operating to permanent improvement.
But to your knowledge, school districts have not done this.
Excuse me.
This may be the first time that this has been done since.
Your Honor, I don't know whether it's the first time it's been done by any school district in Ohio, but clearly under the 2005 Attorney General's opinion, it did involve movement of inside millage from operating to a permanent improvement fund.
And that is legal. Appropriate. And I don't know that to me is not the question before us. The question is what I started out with opposing counsel. The first question is, but for this $25 million rainy day fund, we wouldn't be here.
I think that the appellants, what the appellants want you to say and rule is that before a school district in Ohio can use its inside millage,
they have to dip into a fund of unencumbered dollars such as what they have here.
And in other words, that would involve, I would contend, second-guessing all the judgment calls and reasons and factual reasons why the maintenance of that unencumbered balance was important to the school district. So the school district, the board made those decisions. They have high standards of educational excellence. They've been an excellent with distinction school. They have a AAA bond rating. They balanced their budget at the time 15 out of the last 19 years.
Have they ever been, in the recent history, run out of money in the school district each year, any year?
I don't think that's the case.
Never?
No.
Okay, so they've always been able to cover their costs, including operating costs and capital costs. But this is the first time that they have used the dipping into the transfer of the millage.
Correct, Your Honor. This is the first time that they established a permanent improvement
fund.
How did
they do their capital improvements then, any, you know, facilities improvements, et cetera, in past years, if they haven't done the millage shift?
Some of that was done through, there was a 1993 emergency levy that they had that expired after 5 years.
I thought that was how they accumulated the $24 million fund,
right, and there were capital improvements made.
So they actually did spend some of those monies during 5 years that were raised?
And the, so.
Okay, so then after the 5 years in 98 or 99, they've been sitting on this pot of $24 million, it's probably grown since 98 or 99, but they've had this unencumbered fund sitting there for many years.
It has been there for a while, Your Honor.
Okay. So they never had to dip into it, never even thought about dipping into it, because they are always able to cover their needs, operating and capital, for all these years.
Well, I wouldn't say that they didn't think about it. There was a long-term capital planning process that the record indicates that the Budget Commission that this school district engaged in. They went to the community, they asked what the capital needs would be, what the priorities were with regard to the school buildings, with regard to purchasing school buses, with regard to technology infrastructure. And they heard back from the community and identified what all those needs are. And in the supplement to our brief, you'll see there's four pages of identified needs, not just AstroTurf, but significant maintenance, building maintenance, an upgrade of, as I mentioned earlier, a $75 million infrastructure plant that needed maintaining. The school district listened to the standards that the community had. On the one hand, the community was saying, we are an excellent school district and we have a mission of educational excellence. At the same time, we want to maintain and improve our infrastructure. And so in 2009, 2010, after this long capital improvement planning process, the board made the decision to not spend down the amount in the general fund because they didn't believe that that's what the fiscal conservatism of its of the community wanted.
But it could have put it up for a vote. That's the whole point. I mean, all of the long-term planning, the future improvements, and you're talking about the community coming in and talking about it, then it would have been very easy to go to the voters and actually ask for the levy.
Your Honor, it's correct that they could have gone to the voters, but I would say they did go to the voters in two important respects. Number one, they are the elected officials of the school board. Number two, they did get a great deal of community input. And this was explained at the Budget Commission. They held hearings. They went above and beyond what they were statutorily required to do. Under the statute, you have to hold a public hearing before you move the inside millage, and there was a public hearing.
Were the appellants present, do you know, at the public hearing?
I think the appellants were. I believe that the appellants, of course, are not elected officials. The appellants are three taxpayers. And so the board, as the elected officials, believed that they could, as the elected officials, listen to their community, figure out what the priorities were, talk to the community about what the capital needs were of the district, align what those were, and also listen to the community about, do you want us to change our view of fiscal conservatism? I don't believe that the law dictates to a school board and says you can't be fiscally conservative. That's a local decision.
How many school buildings do they have and how old are they?
There is a high school and a middle school and an elementary school and primary school. And these buildings, the high school has been there since I graduated in 1972. The middle school is attached to the high school. There is an auditorium there, and part of the auditorium improvements were included in the capital needs. The middle school and primary school have had capital upgrades. So it is a substantial physical plant located on Drake Road in Indian Hill, with the primary and the a middle school located on Drake and in a separate campus, the high school and the middle school. There is also there's two stadiums. One stadium is located near the primary middle, and the other stadium is located near the high school. So it's a substantial physical plant, Your Honor, and it is.
Are these buildings over 50 years old?
Some of them are, and some of them aren't. There have been improvements to the footprint, but the capital needs were identified. You can see them in the supplement, you know, piece by piece by piece. What were the needs identified after the capital needs assessment by the community? And this was established in great detail, what those needs were. And so what we have is a decision by a school board to say, we're not going to spend down that money, that unencumbered balance, because we don't believe that that's what the community wants us to do pursuant to, you know, our election as elected officials. That's the call that we made. And at the same time, the community has told us that it wants these permanent improvement needs. And why does it want these permanent improvement needs? It wants them for educational excellence. And a local school board like Indian Hill, which after all I believe is a success story in Ohio, This is a success story of local control.
But, counsel, isn't that what the statute requires? Because I'm agreeing with everything you're saying this morning. But isn't there a requirement that that be presented to the taxpayers and they either buy in or buy out?
Your Honor, there is not a requirement that a school district which uses its inside millage, as we did here, and wants to move that to a permanent improvement fund, there is not a legal requirement that that be approved by the voters. There is not. Now, if the appellants want to change the law of Ohio, if they want to have this statute read clearly required means you can't run a surplus, or clearly required means you have to run it down to insolvency, or clearly required means something other than clearly required by a budget, they want to change the law of Ohio. That's for the legislature. Or it's for them to get elected to the school board. But what this case is really about, whether we agree with the wisdom of the Indian Hill Board or not, what this is about is whether or not a local school board in Ohio can control its budget, subject to review by the Budget Commission and subject to review by the Board of Tax Appeals. There are checks and balances.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 2 minutes to begin with. Counsel, I presume here you represent four people, correct?
One of the taxpayers
is deceased,
so during the...
All right, three people. And they're residents of Indian Hills.
Correct.
And if you are successful, how do they benefit?
Your Honor, the tax increase is still being levied today, so presumably that tax increase would have to be discontinued, at least for a temporary period of time. It may also be that there's an opportunity.
Are they actually paying more in taxes?
Yes. On average, this is about a $400 a year increased tax on the average resident of Indian Hill. If you do the math, and by the way, I have answers to all of the questions you were asking. That unencumbered reserve fund has grown to about $40 million at some points this year. The surpluses have also grown. This is a school district of about 150 to 175 kids graduating annually. Now all those numbers are not necessarily relevant, but they're important. And Justice O'Donnell, the legislature created the ability to do this in 1998. So this is a case of first impression, and a terribly important case, because if Indian Hill can do this, then anybody can do this, and the statute has no meaning. What you hear from them is that they want to be treated like a home rule municipality with inherent power. They talk about local control, but the issue is this is a school district created by the legislature, created by statute. And the legislature can also create limits on the authority that it gives the school district, and that's what it's done here. It allowed them to do this in very particular circumstances when the money is not clearly required in the ensuing fiscal year by the budget and not by all these touchy-feely long-term standards. We are confined to looking at the budget and the budget alone. No matter how much we like Indian Hills School District, no matter how valid their expenses are, all we can do is look at the budget, and they don't have the right to act as philosopher kings and look at state funding into the future. They don't
so
have the right to
schools cannot do long-range planning because they can only look to the ensuing school year. Is that your argument?
No, Your Honor. They can do long-range planning all they want, but what they cannot do is increase taxes when their budget doesn't clearly require the increased tax because they have other funds available. And by the way, the things they're paying for out of the permanent improvement fund—
Would they have gotten the vote of the residents to authorize this?
Your Honor, they talk about community buy-in, but the ultimate community buy-in is to put this before the voters. We don't know
what
the community
thinks. What would they put before the voters?
What's that?
What would they put before the voters?
They would put a permanent improvement special levy under 5705, I think it was 21.
So they can't move the money is what you're saying.
They can't move the money because it's clearly required. Some school districts can move the money, and we're not asking you to second guess the school district's discretion. Some districts can move the money if it's clearly required, if they don't have the huge reserve, if they don't have the huge surplus. But Indian Hill clearly cannot move the money.
So if you have extra surplus or unencumbered balances in your general fund, you can't move money. You have to use it.
If that amount is enough to pay for the expenses that you've proposed, which are expenses that were previously paid for out of the general fund, which is what we're saying is the general fund has all of this money They create this new special fund and say, oh, this fund is empty. Well, there's $40 million sitting in the general fund, which used to pay for the books, which are one of the things in the permanent improvement fund. So in some ways, it's kind of a gimmick to increase taxes. They saw the ability to increase taxes on their voters, and they took it, and now they're saying that they shouldn't be constrained by the budget or by any other law. But if you look at BTA's decision, it's only 4 pages. It makes no findings of fact.
How many years did the voters approve the outside millage?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer
to that. Is that a 5-year?
There was not a levy for a long time in Indian Hill. It was never put before the voters. So there hasn't been a levy in a long time there. But BTA made no findings of fact, did not even discuss the budget in its decision. No numbers in BTA's 4-page decision. One conclusory sentence in BTA's decision. So to say that the deference is owed to the BTA, they did no analysis, and they mutilated the standard of 5705.341 to allow for consideration of these touchy-feely materials beyond the budget, which are completely irrelevant to the statute. So this is a case of first impression, and the opportunity is now for this court to actually effectuate the limits the legislature created when it created the ability to do this.
And the statutes that you want us to focus on, 5705.14 and then 5705.341, correct?
Your Honor, the limit is in 5705.341, and the reason that the increase is not clearly required is because the reserves are not encumbered under 5705.13. And also because general fund, whether the unencumbered balance or the general fund surplus, can be transferred to this permanent improvement fund to cover these expenses quite easily, and that's 5705.14E, transfer of funds, which says money may be transferred from the general fund to any other fund of the subdivision.
And if we agree with you, do we order all the money that's been collected refunded? Is that what you're seeking?
Your Honor, you could do that, and the taxpayers would be grateful.
What are you asking us to do?
Like that. However, that's probably an issue to be worked out at the court below, where we can argue there.
Court are you speaking about?
We have a case pending in the Hamilton County Court of Common Pleas, a taxpayer action.
This is an appeal from the Board of Tax Appeals, isn't it?
That's true, but
the we just don't send cases all over Ohio because we want to.
The taxpayers faced.
What is the remedy you're asking us to impose?
Invalidate the tax increase first and foremost, Your Honor, and order the recovery of funds. However, if you don't, the taxpayers were required by the statute.
What do you mean by order the recovery of funds? How much money are you talking about?
The money will have to be determined in subsequent litigation, Your Honor. It's not currently before the court.
You don't know how much money has been collected here.
I know that it's approximately $6 million at this point. But I don't know the exact dollar figure, and this is not a collections action yet at this point. The important thing for the court to do is recognize that Indian Hill did not have the authority when it increased taxes to increase taxes, and the rest can be
worked
out.
So does this go back to the Board of Tax Appeals?
No, Your Honor. The Board of Tax Appeals took 4 years to render the paltry decision that it did, so I think that you remand to the Budget Commission with instructions to invalidate the tax increase forthwith, or you just invalidate the tax increase forthwith yourself and your decision. And like I say, the taxpayers are required to file a taxpayer action under state law in an attempt to recover those funds. They've done so, and that issue, it could go either way. There are a number of factors. The court could say that the cut only applies prospectively and that no recovery is available, even though we were right on the law.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Thank you.